This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
And this is Schnauzer Logic. It's our big 60th anniversary show, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 1st of August, 2007.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. And now, the HBO original series.
Schnauzer Logic.
Sean Connery was interviewed by Michael Parkinson and bragged that despite his 72 years of age, he could still have sex three times a night. Kylie Minogue, who was also a guest, looked intrigued. After the show, Kylie said, "Sean, if I'm not being too forward, I'd love to have sex with an older man. Let's go back to my place." So, they go back to her place and have great sex. Afterwards, Sean says, "If you think that was good, let me sleep for half an hour and we can have even better sex. But while I'm sleeping, hold my balls in your left hand and my dick in your right hand." Kylie looks a bit perplexed, but says, "Okay." He sleeps for half an hour, awakens, and they have even better sex. Then Sean says, "Kylie, you think that was wonderful, but if you let me sleep for an hour, we can have the best sex yet. But again, hold my balls in your left hand and my dick in your right hand." Kylie is now used to the routine and complies. The results are mind-blowing. Once it's all over and the cigarettes are lit, Kylie asks, "Sean, tell me, does my holding your balls in my left hand and your dick in my right stimulate you while you're sleeping?" Sean replies, "No, but the last time I slept with a slut from Melbourne, she stole my wallet."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of Easter, my friends, Son of East, and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. Yes, this is Schnauzer Logic at our big 60th episode, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It's August the 1st, 2007. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I'm thrilled and delighted to have each and every one of you here for the next 2 hours. We got a great, great show for you today. First of all, you heard him reading this week's joke in the studio, back with us live and local, keeping it live, keeping it local, our own good friend, Sean Meehan. Let's say Son of Easter in him right away.
Son of Easter, it's so very good to be back.
Nice, nice, Sean Connery.
Thank you.
I don't do a very good Sean Connery.
Neither do I. And I think that says something about your Sean Connery, that you came to me before the show and said, you know, your Sean Connery is better than mine. I thought, how could that be?
Far, 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 far better than mine. Big show today for our 60th show. We have a very special guest, J. Keith Van Stratton. J. Keith Van Stratton, you would know him as the original host of the Comedy Central show Beat the Geeks. He's also been the host of the live revival of What's My Line down at the Acme Theater in Los Angeles. You'll also have seen him on VH1's Best Week Ever as one of the snarky comedians that comments on the world around him. Also on just about every one of those E! Television Network Countdown to Something shows, he's one of the talking heads. He's also the host of Yahoo's Answers on the Street. Been in commercials, sitcoms. He is, I think, the hardest working white man in show business today. And he's going to be joining us in our second hour. Very excited to have him here.
I'm thrilled too.
Okay.
You look at me as though I, you know, you could see the jubilation just percolating up to my face. I am thrilled.
It's kind of a silent scream, I guess, is how I would. Also, we're going to be talking with our good friend R. Jason Nathanson. I guess J. Jason Van Nathanson about the world of entertainment and maybe a little news. We'll touch on a little news story this week. Jason, as you know, is editor-producer down at KNX, the big CBS news radio station in Los Angeles.
I heard them.
You did? Well, you were down, you were down there.
I was down south, and what?
Fill us in.
That thing's a flamethrower.
It is. Well,
I heard it.
51,000 watts.
Yeah. There's no escape.
Is that right?
He's omnipresent. He has several of the qualities that I believe are required to make the Christian God.
Is wow.
Yeah.
Including being a Jew. I don't know. And other stuff and nonsense. Parviz is not here. You didn't really think he would be, did you? I mean,
Meredith.
Yeah, really. Sorry, Meredith.
My heart goes out to you. You're going to have to do with us this week, next week. It could be a whole different story.
He showed up last week. He collected his check, and he was gone. When I was starting out in the law practice, the secretary of the junior partner who was my mentor, one of her favorite sayings was, "Even the dead walk on payday." Dorothy, I still remember. I don't even know if she's around anymore, but I love that. She had just the right flavor of cynicism for a New York secretary, you know. It was perfect. So, and I don't think Sherry's going to be able to join us. She's doing that whole Apple product shipping things. Big stuff's going on. Can't talk about it. Secrets next week. We'll know. But anyhow, we got Sean and you and I and everyone else, so it should be a great show. And, of course, we have Mr. Kip Adana. We got Michael Zwirling.
Stroke or unload.
And the vice president, who apparently now says that maybe he was... I was going to say he jumped the gun.
Hasty.
A little hasty, yeah. Jumped the gun when he said that they were on the ends. They had the throws of the...
They were in their last throws.
The last throws, as it were. Now, maybe not so much the last throws, but he's still hopeful.
Yeah.
He's hopeful. Harry Winnington? Not so hopeful. We got Whitney. We got Kenneth.
Home network.
I've now forgotten why we actually inserted some of these sounds.
English motherfucker, do you speak it?
I understand. We got this one. This one.
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
This one.
When is a good fairy going to take off my penis?
And of course this one.
I'm Brian Cox.
And I played before the show for you today. I played the little dueling banjos.
No.
I want somebody in our audience to do a little production sometime. You heard me right before the show. I got a little dueling banjos and kind of put them together. But we have creative listeners. We had almost 1,500 downloads again last week on last week's show with Bobby Slayton. By the way, I got a note from Bobby, and Bobby talked to Jan Karam, who gets an executive producer credit for today's show. She was also responsible for me getting a chance to meet J. Keith Van Stratton at the Mort Saul concert down in Los Angeles. So, but I got a note from Bobby, and then Bobby was talking to Jan and said, "Oh my God, that was more fun than I've had. Like, that was the best interview ever." Which is such a nice thing for folks to say, and we've heard this before from people.
We have. We've had a few really nice compliments from people that I respect, and you know, it makes my week.
It's a nice thing.
It really
is. It's a nice thing, and I've said it before, you know, and I send emails out to people because frequently the show sounds like a radio show because we basically run it like a radio show. This is a full studio here, and we've both had a lot of experience in radio, but people are always a little bit hesitant. What's the show going to be about? And, you know, since it's on the internet, are you going to sandbag me? And what I always say to people is, you know, this is not O'Reilly. This is not a political talk show. This is all about entertainment. The purpose, for me, what a host needs to do is welcome you into his or her home. That's what the host is all about. You should feel comfortable. You should enjoy the other guests who are in the home. My only rule is don't feed cheese to the poodle. He loves it, but later on I got to clean up the mess. That's the rule. That's the only rule of Schnauzer logic. And so I'm thrilled. What's interesting is then Jan said, well, I actually know other people who are famous. Maybe I can get them to come on the show. She's been holding back on me. How long have I been fucking doing radio? Pretty much as long as I've known you, I've been doing radio. Come on, cough up the big names. I mean, not necessarily longer names. We've got J.K. Van Stratton, but I mean the bigger names. So we got that going on, and stuff and nonsense, so it should be a good show today. But you look good. The trip down south, it agreed with you?
I really love to travel. I hate to be separated from my wife. That's always a miserable part. But I love to travel. I love the event of Comic-Con. I just really love it, which I know for many is strange. It took Parviz by surprise because, of course, I don't read comic books and I don't have a television. So the big components of Comic-Con are comics, certainly.
Yes.
And all the art and writers and things that surround that. Television. All the major studios and networks have kiosks down there, and they're promoting next season's whatever, and they have their panels of, you know, all the people from Heroes or what have you are there. There are movies. Yes. Certainly, people previewing, studios previewing genre films that might interest people like that. And this year was a big Blade Runner anniversary thing. They had all the people from Blade Runner, including the director, Ridley Scott, except for...
The star.
The star.
Black fellow.
Yeah, yeah.
One known for a tax evasion.
No.
Am I thinking of?
Thinking of Wesley Snipes. You're thinking of Blade. No, this is Blade Runner with Harrison Ford.
I was thinking of Wesley Snipes.
Right.
And then I thought you were thinking I was thinking of Arsenio Hall.
And Harrison Ford had to give his apologies because I believe he is on set.
Indiana Jones?
He's in principal photography with Indiana Jones.
And the Chamber of Horrors.
Exactly. No, one of the kids dies. I don't know which. But...
I think Gary Coleman, actually. I think.
And then, of course, there's the video game contingent. So all the big video game come, you know, Sony and Xbox and all these different people have big kiosks there with sort of beta games down there that you can play and what have you. It's sort of like a little E3.
Is Kevin Smith like the mayor of Comic-Con now?
I think he's got a very special place.
Doesn't he?
Yeah. You know, I think that Kevin Smith...
If he has no movie, if he has no project, if he's got nothing, he still shows up and people are interested. Like, what? Did you see him down there?
No.
Oh.
Because well, I'm sure he was showing at 9 different kind of panel discussions and what have you, but I don't go to those.
No.
Because...
You were in Tijuana.
See? No, I don't go to those because there are big, long lines, and I'm not interested in being around, in sort of an enclosed place with thousands of other people waiting to go have a few minutes, a little audience.
Right.
With even the Pope doesn't draw like that for me. So what I like
Are you saying
about,
the Pope's not a good artist? Is that what you're saying? The Pope is...
the Pope is an excellent artist.
mixed media?
Yeah.
But seriously, folks.
Oh, the Pope. Now I'm all kerflummoxed. But anyways, I love the event. I love seeing the people. It was something that Parviz was saying last week, you know, is there are no girls allowed sign. And one of the things that struck me after he made that comment and after I got off the show as I was walking around was I think what people my age and older don't really understand is what are the biggest three movies at the box office this summer? I mean, Spider-Man, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, and Transformers. What do they all have in common? They're genres of the fantastic.
Right.
What's the number one show on TV? Heroes. You know, look at how this is mainstream now. Sort of these fantastical genres, these things, when we were kids...
But how can we feel superior about ourselves and making fun of the geeks when the geeks are in control?
It presents an interesting conundrum, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I like to separate them by the size of the man boobs. I like to use that as an arbiter of who's eating microwave burritos and playing too much Xbox 360.
Can you play too much Xbox 360?
Yes. Yes. Last week, I was in doubt. This week, no. There is an answer to that question.
So if you don't go down to see because what's interesting is my homepage on the internet, even though we live here in the northern part of California, my homepage is the LA Times.
I like the way that it's laid out. I'm very interested in entertainment industry news,
sure,
both the business side as well as the sort of content side. And I think the LA Times remains sort of one of the finer daily newspapers in the United States. They actually have real reporters that go out and do real reporting. So, but as a result, because Comic-Con is in Southern California and it's about entertainment, Comic-Con got picked up every morning on the homepage of the LA Times. And so I could see all of, you know, J.J. Abrams was there,
sure,
showing this and that about Lost and Kevin Smith and who's bigger, is it J.J. Abrams or Kevin Smith? And, you know, the whole thing on and on and on. And so if you don't go for those kind of high-profile events and you're not eating Chiclets, what do you, I mean, is it, what do you do?
Here's,
like, how did you spend, like, your first full day there?
Well, I never spend a full day at the con.
All right.
It's a little overwhelming.
Con!
Exactly. The deal is, there is a huge expo floor that is covered entirely with booths. There's no empty space available. And they have all kinds of, you know, there are presses and artists and obviously guys selling sort of sci-fi, comic book, fantasy
tchotchkes. So it's kind of like CES, like kind of like the Consumer Electronics Show, but
exactly,
for entertainment, initially,
right,
I guess, pulp print entertainment, but now far beyond that.
Now far beyond that. The actual comic portion represents a fairly small subset,
right,
of what's going on.
Right.
But there are a lot of great artists there, and they're kind of my peers.
So you mentioned that you were going to go find Harryhausen.
Yeah, and the problem with Harryhausen this year, I think based on last year's overwhelming, crushing signing opportunity, was that you had to win a raffle,
oh,
in order to get to Harry, you know, to get to Harry, or to Ray, or whatever his name is, you know, the legend that he is, and
we just call him Harry,
and I didn't win.
Oh, fuck!
But essentially, I just like to go around and talk to my peers, and they're really cool and very open. And what I like to see is just, you know, I'm sure a lot of you out there have dreams of being an artist or a musician or, you know, something creative.
Employed.
Sadly, probably some of you also have that. But in general, I mean, a lot of us have square jobs that really don't feed us, that don't feed the soul. And one of the things you realize when you're down there is a vast audience for all kinds of creative stuff that you really don't see. I mean, I think that there's a sense that if you want to get into film and you say you want to go into special effects or you want to be a production designer or you want to do something like this, there are only about maybe 20 or 30 major motion pictures a year that are going to have you, that are going to have positions for you. There are only X number of TV shows, maybe a dozen, that are going to need your services. But one of the things that Comic-Con does is it reminds you that there's a whole subculture out there that is moving money around, that is employing people to do things that are very creative. And that's what I find really exciting about it.
I want to talk some more about that. We'll take our first break. This is going to be our third week celebrating the Summer of Love 40 years ago. All tunes this week are from the Summer of Love once again. And come back on the other side, talk a little bit more about this, and maybe get into it with our good friend Jason Nathanson. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein and Sean Meehan in the studio. We're both inviting you to please stick around.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Hey there, Georgie girl, swinging down the street so fancy free. Nobody you meet could ever see the loneliness there
inside you.
Hey there, Georgie girl, why do all the boys just pass you by? Could it be you just don't try, or is it the clothes you wear?
You're always window shopping, but never stopping to buy.
So shed those dowdy feathers and fly
a little bit.
Hey there, Georgie girl, there's another Georgie deep inside. Bring out all the love you hide, and oh, what a change there'd be. Georgie girl.
a reality. You can't always run away. Bring out all the love you hide, and oh, what a change there'd be. The world would see a new Georgie girl. Wake up, Georgie girl.
Welcome back. We are about 21 minutes into this 60th anniversary episode of Schnauzer Logic. Being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 1st of August, 2007. My name is Robin Goldstein, www.schnauzerlogic.com, Robin at schnauzerlogic.com. We're also over on myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. We're on youtube.com/schnauzerlogic. We got a phone number, it's area code 206-666-6540. And we're all over the goddamn internet. It's great. And we're on Ken Toretsky's page, and we're on, and you mentioned during the break, I said to you, because you mentioned that you talk to your peers, right? And I think that's a nice thing to do with these conferences. I go to the tech conferences. I frequently go to the computer shows and things of that nature. And I love to talk with ideas about people. And over the years, I've actually told programmers of bugs in their program that they had no idea, right? Because they go, well, nobody ever reported it to us. I can fix that. And sure enough, like a week later, I get an email. It's like, here's a beta version. Want to try it out? And then if it's good, I'll release it. And it's like, holy crap. Like, if I didn't go to the show and say, hey, I love this, but blah, 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 like, it would be broken forever. Like, the smallest act make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So you said that you I guess in the past you've gone down with sort of more of a portfolio, but
right,
you got the internet, so you don't need to do that.
Exactly. It seemed foolish to carry stuff around, so I let my cyber fingers do the walking, and I just brought down business cards with the URL on them. The URL being...
Yes?
SeanPatrickMeehan.com. Sean, S-E-A-N, and Meehan, M-E-E-H-A-N. Patrick, as you would normally spell it.
Can I have spinningthegreat.com point to SeanPatrickMeehan.com?
I would be so excited. I would be so excited to have that. I will give you all the necessary codes.
I already got it, my friend. And so does this guy. He's got your number, too.
Wait. Could it be?
Oh, yeah.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
Yes, but I think he drives a Prius now.
Success.
It doesn't rhyme. Let us say, son of Easter, our good friend Jason Nathanson. How are you, my friend?
Son of Easter, Robin, I'm well, and despite rumors to the contrary, I just want to clear up, I'm not the father of Nicole Richie's baby.
Well, neither am I. Now, is she going to jail?
Yeah, she's going to jail. 4 days.
He sounded so...
4 days.
Didn't he sound chipper when he said that? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to jail. I have nothing to be worried about.
That's the
about.
First good meal she'll have gotten in God knows how long.
And is this a good thing that she's going to jail?
I don't know if it's sure. I mean... Look at how much good it's done for Paris Hilton.
So she's already fallen off the wagon, right? I mean, she's back out. She's clubbing. She's partying. She's just keeping a lower profile.
There's no reports of, you know, really incessantly crazy behavior from Paris Hilton.
No, that's
she took cab fare.
She never went to rehab. She never went to rehab. She did an alcohol diversion program, but she, you know, she was never in rehab. She never fell so hard like Lindsay Lohan did.
No, or clearly Britney. Britney is, yeah, is seems to clearly be on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, really bad thing. And you know, at this point, it's really bad for the kids, and you got to feel sorry for them. You know, whatever you think of her, and whether or not she should be in the paper so much, and who really cares about her? She's got two little kids, and latest magazine reports say she's feeding them soda in their baby bottles, and that their teeth are so messed up, she's asked dentists to whiten her baby's teeth, and they've apparently refused. So, I mean,
so you thought Jason had a lot of money to buy a Prius? That's FU money. When you can have your infant's teeth whitened, baby, that's Hollywood, swimming pools, movie stars.
Baby teeth whitening. Maybe that's it. Maybe we should start that along with our thing of driving heiresses around.
The drunk heiress driving squad. That's right.
And baby teeth whitening.
And baby teeth whitening. You know, I feel so badly. Have you seen that copy of OK Magazine?
I've seen the cover, and I've read a couple of reports online, but I haven't actually seen it.
So do you know about this? Is it a British magazine or an Australian magazine?
Okay. Yeah, it's a British tabloid.
Yeah, OK. You know, it's OK with the exclamation point. She did a photo shoot for them and really ran off the rails completely, and apparently she was such a mess that initially they were, like, not going to run any of this stuff at all. And I guess that then it was, she was abusive in the process. Am I leaving something out here, or
they were going to be
nice about it originally.
They were going to be nice about it, and they had pictures of the thing, and she was supposed to be paid $1 million for the pictures, and the pictures turned out so bad, and most of them were pretty much unusable. So that's why they didn't end up using them. It wasn't out of, you know, the kindness of their heart. It just they didn't really have enough to use, and they didn't pay her $1 million for them, so they couldn't run the pictures.
Gotcha.
But apparently she was wiping, her dog was taking dumps.
The
shoot, and she was wiping it up with $1,000 dresses.
Yeah, just ignorant kind of stuff. I mean, if it's to be believed, and for all of the stuff we've heard from her, we haven't heard a rebuttal, we haven't heard a denial. So I have to assume that there's some truth here, as the rappers say, it's the emis. So wow, that'll be funny to the three Jews who listen will go, hey, that's funny. She made a Jewish rapper joke, but whatever. But that's not why you called.
No, not at all.
So you want to talk about pedophiles?
Yes. I mean, when do I not want to talk about pedophiles?
That just sounds like weird people who protect animals.
Well, that's the British pronunciation. Right? They don't call them pedophiles. In the UK, they call them pedophiles.
That's the proper pronunciation, is pedophile.
Well, I feel better about that. But he said yes as excitedly as he said about Nicole Richie going to jail. So just so that you know, I picked up the same amount of excitement in your voice on both stories.
Well, there's a big story going on down here in the LA area. It's definitely taken over in the past 5 days. And it's getting a lot of national attention, too, and it's the story of Jack McClellan, who is a self-professed pedophile. This guy goes around saying, yes, I am in love with young girls, little girls, prepubescent girls, but apparently he's never actually done anything sexual with any of them. He's never been arrested. He's never been charged with anything. And he has a website where he tells people where to go to find young girls, and he rates these places by little symbols saying, you know, this place has a lot of young girls if you go there, and they're cute, like if you go to a fair or a public library or a pool. And he's recently moved from from Seattle to Los Angeles, and he lives out of his car, and he just kind of drives around here and puts up this website, and he takes pictures of these places with young girls and puts the pictures on the website. Now, apparently, none of this is illegal. You're allowed to take pictures of little girls and, you know, post that you're attracted to them. But
if not, Google would be in jail, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. There's nothing pornographic, per se, about the pictures. So he's apparently within his rights. But a lot of people are up in arms about that, saying, well, why is this allowable? Why can this guy take a picture of my daughter at the pool and put it up there and say he's attracted to her, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with that? So it's starting this whole talk about legislation and free speech, and he's been interviewed all over the place.
Let's be clear in our language here, because I think it's an interesting point. And you said people are saying, why is there nothing wrong with that? I don't think anyone is saying that there's nothing wrong with that. I think what people are saying is that's not illegal. That's right. Very different than saying there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
and that precision of thought. No, I'm not coming down on you, but I think, because I listen to a lot of talk radio, and one of the things that drives me nuts about talk radio, because I'm sure that this is all over the L.A. area, right, in terms of what, you know, what they're talking about on K's, ABC, and, right?
Yeah,
John and
yeah.
Jeff and Ken and Bob and, you know, Doug and Allison, they're over on the FM side.
They're having sex.
Yeah, the lack of precision. No one's saying that there's nothing wrong with this. What people are saying is, you know, what the ACLU says is not this is a good thing. What they're saying is this is not illegal. This does not rise to the level of something being illegal where you can have prior restraint on free speech.
Right, and he's turning this into now a free speech issue. And the people who host his website, it's hosted through some Dutch company or something like that, and it's been shut down now, and he's trying to get it back up. He pays for the site with his Social Security income because he has no other form of income. And a lot of people are saying, you know, why can he be allowed to do this? Why is this free speech? And, on the one hand, I do agree, okay, you do have the right to say things, but when it really creeps people out like this, and it's borderline kind of inciting other people who might have done illegal things.
Let me get out my copy of the Constitution here. I've got it online. I can actually do a search for the word creep in the Constitution and see how Hamilton... Come on. Are you serious?
Well, I mean, there's certain levels of creepiness that rise to, you know...
You know, you're going to have to replace that word with another so we don't laugh.
And let me understand who gets to be the arbiter of that particular level of creepiness. Or is it, as the Supreme Court said, I can't define it, but I know it when I feel icky.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So we should have community standards of ickiness.
Well, this society should, yeah, we should decide about, you know, what we feel is really over the line.
Why do you think this needs to be codified? I guess my position here is there is a centuries, nay, millennia old technique that civilizations have used to deal with the icky, and it's called shunning. It's basically, look, I don't like what you're doing. I don't want to associate with you. I don't want to be near you. And in fact, I got my eye on you because you're icky. All right. Why does this have to be codified into our law? Why can't we just respond using the cultural tools and the natural instincts that we have to just say, you know, you're an icky dude, and I tell you what, you're going to be regularly harassed by people when you are at these parks or pools or what have you, using the same techniques of communication that he himself is using to get the word out about these parks and pools and libraries. Why do we need an additional law that might, in fact... curtail free speech in other realms.
And in fact, you know, not to pile on you, but there's two of us in the studio here and only one of you on the phone. So it's, but I mean, this the kind of abuses of these systems are exactly what we're dealing with now with the current federal administration, right? And no one's being called to task, no one's being called to be responsible. The monitoring of American communications, of phone calls, of emails, this kind of wholesale spying without that is a fundamental breakdown of civil liberties, and they do matter, because at the end of the day, who the fuck is responsible? The president's not responsible, the vice president's not responsible, the fucking attorney general is like, I don't know, I don't remember, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's going to require the Congress to impeach the attorney general to get him to answer a question? That's why these things are problematic. Over.
But I'm not necessarily for any kind of law.
Yes, you are.
But I mean, I think it brings up a lot of interesting questions that need to be talked about. Because first of all, there's a very knee-jerk reaction when it comes to anything involving young kids, right? When it involves pedophilia, people really they might tend to overreact. But I think there's a good reason behind that, because they want to protect their kids, and there's no a bigger scary thing for parents than something that might harm their kids. So that's why I think there's a lot of overreaction about this right now. But, I mean, it's an interesting thing to look at in this day and age with the Internet and free speech and all this stuff that you can and can't put online. I mean, when does it cross the line? Why does this guy have a right to take a picture of your little kid and put it on a website that caters to pedophiles? I mean, why does he have that right to do that? Why do we want to protect that as a society?
From whence does the right come? Or, you know, I think as a general rule, rights are viewed as not, you don't have to justify why you get to do something.
Right, they're inalienable.
Right. Someone has to come along and create the counterargument that this is so corrosive to the safety of citizens, that this is so corrosive to the operation of society that it can't be allowed. Hence the yelling fire in the crowded theater or things like this. That act is so dangerous. It's so,
right.
So awful.
Do you not see a scenario where he puts a picture of a little girl, somebody goes on the site, falls whatever in love with this little girl and goes to find her and harms her? I mean, that's one scenario where this might be that corrosive to society.
Well, I guess I don't. That there's a much longer chain of responses that are required to go onto his site and then see this little girl and then fall in love with her and then do something illegal, you know, assault her in some way. And
right.
That's a ponderous chain of causal linkage where somebody in a crowded theater yelling fire, one can immediately see how that represents a danger and a threat to everyone in the theater. I mean, I don't think that the causal chain is so elaborate.
You know, in law, when you're studying torts in law school, right, and this would effectively be a sort of the civil version would be a tort, there's two kinds of responsibility, right? Or two kinds of connective responsibility. There's cause and fact, and then there's proximate cause. And they're very different. The cause and fact is but for the fact that you got up in the morning, right, you wouldn't have been in your car, and therefore you wouldn't have been driving past that stop sign when that other person was forced to stop, and therefore they missed getting on their train, and they weren't able to get the promotion, and so therefore you're responsible because you got up that morning because you stopped that guy from going through the stop sign. That's the but for, and that's a very weak connection. So you need to have cause and fact, but you also need to have proximate cause, which is how directly related is one event to the other event. And the fact that you got up in the morning is so remotely connected to whether or not somebody got to the office in time and got that promotion as to not be probative in that process. I mean, here's some place where legal analysis is very helpful. So in all of these cases where they're arguing for prior restraint of free speech, what they're looking at is the cause and fact. But for the fact there was a website, this wouldn't have happened. Well, that's so remote. Now, if you can show me that what this guy does is take photographs of, you know, the top five hot five-year-olds, and he sends them out in emails to known pedophiles, and then they use it every week, and they have a game, and they want, you know, all right, fine, now you're getting to the point where he's doing something very affirmative and he's distributing information to people, but simply taking photographs in public, which is everyone keeps telling me on the whole Google thing, hey, there's no expectation of privacy in a public space. I mean, every time I go to a fucking show or a fucking cocktail party and I talk to people about the problems of Google Street View, they go, hey, no expectation of privacy in a public place. The court said that. Well, first of all, the court didn't say that, but regardless, or in New Jersey, irregardless, regardless of that fact, you can't have it both ways.
Don't you think? You just said there's a reasonable expectation of privacy, or you think there should be, right? And the people that you want to protect yourself, and then the people that need protection the most are kids who can't protect themselves, who don't know about the legal rights, or they can't go and contact the webmaster and have their picture taken down. We need to protect these kids. We need to do that for them. So if you think that everybody else should have reasonable expectation of privacy when it comes to Google, shouldn't little kids have an expectation of privacy when they go to the pool and not have their picture taken by an admitted pedophile?
I don't think the fact that he's an admitted pedophile makes any difference whatsoever. I think you need to drop that out of the
website.
You need to drop that out of the equation. Because the only difference between what he's doing and what Google's doing is he says he's a pedophile and Google doesn't say that they're pedophiles, right? But the two websites can be used in the same way. In fact, as you and I both know, that Google Street View, the very first thing people did was look for naked people, right? They were looking on beaches and in building tops and that woman with the thong. So the first thing that happened was the peeping Toms were getting their jollies by looking for people who were partially dressed or in situations where they were sort of being embarrassed. That's the very first thing that happened. And nobody suggested that Google be shut down from any of that stuff.
I just want to tell you this story. I sat on the corner of Highland and Hollywood with my pants down for 4 days, and I couldn't get on that fucking thing. All right?
Which one, the pedophile website or the Google?
Either! I was soliciting. Please, I want to be on your website. I got no expectation of privacy.
Yeah, but we have an expectation not to be nauseous, my friend. That's...
Let me get out my constitution. I'm going to word search nausea.
All right, listen, here's what we want to do. I need to cool down. We're going to take a quick break. Can you hang around for another segment?
Yeah, we got to tell you about the new co-host on The View when we come back.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Do we have inside information? We have the dirt, we have the scoop, we have the skinny, we have the 411?
Well, we have the Barbara Fuckers announcement.
We've got an area code.
we got the actual official announcement. All right, good.
Yeah.
So that's a yes. You can hang around. Outstanding. You know I love you, don't you?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I think people hear us go at it with
you
each other.
You seem to want to have it both ways, though, too.
Well, yes, and there's a website for that. Oh, see, the problem is Sean took his headphones off. He didn't hear the joke. Forget it. Let it go.
I know.
You left
the audience heard it.
There you go. All right. We'll take a quick break, play another tune, back on the other side. Listening to Schnauz Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, and our special guest in this segment, Jason Nathanson. We're all inviting you. Please stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
Riding along on a carousel, trying to catch up to you. Riding along on a carousel, will I catch up to you? Horses chasing, cause they're racing.
Soon you leave and then I lose.
anything you do not understand? Is there anything you understand only partially? If you have not been fully oriented, you must file a complaint with personnel. File a faulty complaint, and they dock you.
Welcome back. We're 46 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, straight white booze, vegetarian, lesbian, fraternity boy, trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman, patent attorney with his arsenic humor and a master's degree in city planning. 206-666-6540. We were talking during the break. You know, it's funny. Every now and then we'll get an email from someone and they'll say to us, oh, by the way, let me say welcome back, Son of Easter, Sean Meehan.
Son of Easter.
And let's say welcome back and Son of Easter to Jason Nathanson.
Son of a pedophile defender.
All right. First of all, during the break, I'm going to cop to you here on the air. During the break, I said to Sean, God damn, he had a good point. I think you do make a good point. It's hard to be consistent about the why is it okay for us to argue that there shouldn't be the free flow of this information on Google, but it's we don't want the prior restraint of the free flow of information on a pedophile site. So I'm gonna give the point to Mr. Nathanson, but
Ding.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I need to think a little bit more about one why one offends me and the other one doesn't. And it's clear that at my core, I am someone, you know, I'm Goldstein for the defense. You know, right. I want to right the wrongs and I want to left the rights. And so those who are downtrodden, I want to lift them up. And those who are upright, I want to step all over them. And so whereas Google is, you know, I think that's it. I'm a fucking contrarian. That's really what it's all about.
Well, I don't know. You are, Google has an enormous resources to defend itself, and Google, you know, Street View is an enormous opportunity for Google to generate revenue. But this guy has an unpopular perspective.
Jack McClellan.
Jack McClellan has an
not related to Scott McClellan, former White House press secretary.
No,
I want to point out.
No,
who is not as we know a pedophile in any way.
No. But he did leave his job to spend more time with his family, and I'm wondering if that wasn't to protect himself from Jack.
That's a good point.
And who hasn't?
but in any case, yeah, you have this person with unpopular speech, and you want to... People with tons of resources and power like Google, you know, one of the most powerful corporations in the United States at this point, they don't need help. They don't need... To have their right to free speech protected because they got a building, they got a skyscraper full of lawyers to file all kinds of paperwork to help them out. But
actually, the lawyers are all in the basement. I've interviewed over there. They're not in the skyscraper, just so that you know. They form the foundation of each of the various buildings.
But the perv, I'm glad they're part of the actual load-bearing structure.
Yeah. You don't want to go down there without a mask.
It's a hard hat area.
Yeah.
The perv, you know, he is supporting unpopular speech, and that is the kind of speech that I think the rights of free speech are designed to protect.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. I'm going to go send some more money to the ACLU, and I don't think that these are good things, as I know that none of us do. None of us are interested in supporting Nazis or things of that nature. I'm not...
Speak for yourself.
Well played. It's the end of the day, it's not the protection of the rights of those who are doing these icky, creepy things. They're icky and creepy, and eventually they will get their comeuppance, whether in this lifetime or some other space. I do have some faith in cosmic justice. I don't trust the institutions because they're run by people who have agendas, and they're run by political appointees. They're run by the Alberto Gonzalez's of the world, and I don't trust them. And that's the same thing that's operating here in my mind, not in defending this guy, but in stopping. I'm not trying to defend Jack McClellan. What I'm trying to do is prevent the prior restraint of speech, because if you don't like pedophile speech, supposing you think that transgender speech is icky. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm worried about my own ass. And so what about protecting? Well, we don't want websites where there are transgender people because they're creepy and icky. What they're doing is sick and disgusting, and it's not in the Bible. I mean, where do you draw that line, Jason?
Well, you can draw the line here is where transgender behavior is not illegal, but pedophilia is. So, I mean, that's where I think you can draw the line. You have to take these things on a case-by-case basis, and I understand the slippery slope argument. And wanting, you know, if it starts here, where is it going to stop? But I think a lot of the times we don't take things on a case-by-case basis enough because we look at the, you know, way, way, way down the road end game, whereas in this particular instance, this might be harming society, and maybe we need to do something about it. And I think there can be a line where you stop, and where you start, and where you say, okay, this is wrong, but we're going to allow, you know, the rest of this side. But when it comes to, you know, putting kids on the website, that's wrong, and we're not going to allow that.
I'm uncomfortable with that sort of fiat.
Well, what's interesting is I would say to you that's exactly the opposite way that I would look at doing legislation. I wouldn't want legislation to be a quick fix for individual wrongs. I want legislation to be a kind of global structure that we hang over things. It needs to be as generalized as possible, therefore as benign as possible. And we rely on the law and the local law enforcement officials and local individuals to decide how to apply those things. But I don't want the law to be so specific that we have a Robin law and a Jason
a Jim's
law and
law.
A Jim's law.
A Jack's law.
Yeah, Jack's law, exactly.
We do have those laws.
I know, and they all scare me. They all do. Every law that has ever emerged from some sort of child kidnapping, child murder, child sexual abuse has always felt overreaching to me. Everyone that carried a name.
You get scared, you're like, oh, there's another one.
Uh-oh, yeah.
Here, infringe upon my ability to kidnap kids.
Here comes Cindy's law. Pretty soon I won't be able to buy the kinds of books I like. Here comes Fifi's law. Well, pretty
much. You're the first person I've ever heard speak out against individual child predator laws.
Well, I'll be the second.
Okay.
I'll be the second, and I don't think either one of us is in favor of child predators.
No.
I don't. In fact, I'm sure that I can say that without any fear of contradiction. That's not what we're against. It's not the child predator laws. It's not the child predators that we're concerned with, because those, we understand that there's a risk there, and we need to figure out how to address it. It's these omnibus kinds of legislation. You know, it's like when you go fucking tuna fishing, and you wind up trapping and killing all the dolphins. I am the dolphin of the internet.
Yeah.
I wish I could make the sound. Maybe I'll insert it during post. Okay, well, that's creepy, and therefore we'll have to deal with that.
Well, what's the story with the...
Yeah, we got about 2 minutes here until coming up to the top of the first hour. Give us the story about The View.
The new co-host of The View, it's been a long process. They've gone through a lot of different people, and it's finally been announced.
Dun, 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 dun.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Woo!
Well, this will keep her from doing other things that will interfere with my life.
A black Jewish man. Good choice.
She'd previously been doing a morning radio show. She was one of the ones that took over for Howard Stern.
Wake Up with Whoopi.
Yeah, and it wasn't really doing so well. She's one of those comedians that when I see something with her, I'm like, okay, I like her. She's funny, but then I never think of her ever again. I think she's a good choice. She's kind of like Ellen DeGeneres, where her humor is not exactly offensive, but she's quick-witted and funny. And
she's more political than Ellen is, though.
She's definitely more political, absolutely. But I think it's a good choice. We'll see how. I don't really watch the show. Don't really care that much, but you know.
Doesn't it seem like a step down for her though?
From Center Square on Hollywood Squares.
But she owned Hollywood Squares. She was the exec producer. She owned
was
that
she?
Property. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then maybe there will be some reevaluation. Here's the thing I'm concerned about. If you ever saw her old show, that she took up all the air in the room. The guest got about, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of talk time, and she took the other, you know, 56. And I'm wondering if there's enough air in that room, or whether Joy Behar is going to be sucking wind, just trying to, you know, everyone's turning blue.
That was a snipe at me, wasn't it? I could tell. That was a very veiled snipe at me. I'm sorry. I know. I talk too much. I apologize.
That's why they didn't go with you.
Is that why they didn't go with me?
Yeah.
And that's the only reason they didn't go with me.
That's what it said on PerezHilton.com. Why they didn't go with Robin Goldstein was, sucks up too much air in the room.
Don't you worry a little bit about that, though, if you're on an ensemble kind of show like that?
Yeah, it's not the best thing in the world. But Rosie O'Donnell had a pretty similar personality. She was good for the show. I mean,
I think very good.
Oh, God, yeah.
Brought the ratings up. So.
Oh, yeah. So. And I think brought the level of discussion of the show up, too. It made it more interesting. She brought Joy Behar back into the program.
Yeah.
I think Joy re-engaged. I mean, Joy was, listen, she'd come in drunk every morning. You could tell.
Whoopi Goldberg is a smart woman with opinions on, you know, world issues and things like that. And I think it's better than just some talking head model or somebody who doesn't know anything and brings nothing to the conversation. I think she brings a lot to the table, so that's good stuff.
No argument for me.
They're also going to hire a fifth co-host, and that remains to be seen, so that's going to be... They were in talks with somebody. I'd never heard of her before. That fell through. Kathy Griffin is still on the table as the possible fifth co-host. So,
all right.
So that makes Robin very happy.
Why? Because we're so...
You're a Kathy Griffin fan.
I am. We're frequently confused for each other. That he laughed at.
Why has there been no call to Jack McClellan? Where's...
All right, my friend. Listen, thanks so very much. You know,
absolutely.
You raised this interesting topic, and then you thought maybe it wouldn't be a good topic for the show. We were talking during the segment. We thought this was a great, great topic. So thanks very much. How'd you feel?
I'm glad. And if anybody wants to hear an interview that my radio station did with Jack McClellan, we caught him yesterday. It's fascinating and creepy, but it is fascinating. Go to KNX1070.com and give a listen.
KNX1070.com, and we'll put it on the webpage. That's outstanding. Thank you very much. You're still over at Blogspot, randomshow.blogspot.com.
I am.
And
I want to give a birthday shout-out to my mom. Happy birthday.
Oh!
Next week, they're going on a cruise to Alaska.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is.
Lifelong dream of theirs finally happening.
All right. And Rosie, tomorrow morning?
Yep.
All right. KSCO every Thursday morning at what time?
6:45 a.m.
6:45, and people can listen to that on go over to KSCO.com.
Right, when all the cokeheads are up. Before.
All right.
That's our audience.
I saw Rosemary the other day. I stopped over the hill and visited with her, and she had lots of nice, nice things to say about you and the segment that you do every week. She said it's one of the segments that she looks forward to doing every week.
Oh, brilliant, Robin.
Why are you doing Emma Thompson? I don't understand. Okay, maybe that'll make more sense later on. All right, my friend, listen, we've got to take a break. We're going to take our next break here. We're coming back with J. Keith Van Stratton. How does that sound to you?
Sounds great.
All right, let you work on the enthusiasm. All right, take care. We'll talk to you next week.
Take it easy,
bye,
buddy.
Cheers. Bye-bye. All right, we'll take a quick break, a little tunage, and come back to the other side. I think we will be talking with J. Keith Van Stratton. You are listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein and Sean Meehan. We're both inviting you to please stick around.
Boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles. That I don't know about the little tricks you play, and never see you when deliberately you put things in my way. Well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. You took advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles.
miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh, deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. The Eiffel Tower. The Taj Mahal, nice to see on clear days. You thought that I would need a crystal ball to see right through the haze. Well, there's a poke at you, you're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles.
More fun than flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're 4 minutes into the second hour of our 60th anniversary episode of Schnauzer Logic. Being recorded on Wednesday, it's August the 1st, 2007. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal. Straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning. Saying welcome back in Sona Vista to Sean Meehan.
The Sona Vista.
Little Who?
A Little Who. I love the Townsend one-note guitar solo.
Now, of course, all the stuff that we think about as being commonplace, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, how breaking was that to just kind of like have the nerve to do that?
Yeah. I mean, just absolutely incredible. When you think of the music of 10 years earlier and almost none of this was present.
Right, right. So 57, right? The year that I was born, right? That was some mixture of rockabilly, right? And a lot of Tony Bennett.
Right. And a lot of standards still being, you know, manufactured at that point.
Exactly. So I mentioned that when I was down in Los Angeles a few weeks ago for the Mort Sahl 80th birthday concert. By the way, Mort's going to be here in the Bay Area this weekend. I don't know if you got the email. John DeCoven sent us a note. Mort's going to be up in Mill Valley Friday night and Saturday night. So we're going to see. We'll talk about after the show. Maybe you got a chance to go up there and go watch Mort perform live.
That would be cool.
It should be really outstanding. But when I was down there, Jan Karam, who serves very frequently as sort of executive producer of this show, got me into the green room so I could get a chance to meet some really cool people. And one of the really cool people that I met was J. Keith Van Stratton. And I walked over and I recognized him instantly. And I think I liked him immediately because I think he didn't know that I recognized him. And I thought, oh, that is so cool. And I thought, how could I not recognize J. Keith Van Stratton? First of all, he was host of Beat the Geeks on Comedy Central, a program that I love that had way too short a run. He's been the host of a live stage revival of What's My Line down at the Acme Theater in Los Angeles that just finished a latest run. And every place you look, it's getting incredible reviews. He hosted the game show, Radio Game Show. He is currently the host of Yahoo's Answers on the Street. if you don't know the name, you recognize the face. He's been on the Best Week Ever. He's been on just about all of those e-snark countdown shows, commercials, sitcoms. And if you haven't seen him there, you've probably seen him eating hot dogs at the Angels games. down in Anaheim. I consider him to be the hardest working man in show business, at least the hardest working white man. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome to the airways Mr. J. Keith Van Stratton.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Please, stay seated.
Keith, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, and as I was going through all of this stuff, this is only a small part of the stuff that I was able to find looking at your website, jkeith.net, and of course, and over on the IMDb. It looks to me like you're working all the time.
I would say I'm the hardest working man barely in showbiz. Once in a while, they reluctantly creak open the heavy iron gates and allow me to sneak in, and then they find me and throw me out.
Well, you know, and you're sort of listed and known as a comedian, but clearly you're also an actor and also a talented writer. And I noticed on one of the places that you grew up in Chicago. And the first thing, of course, I think of is, what influence did being in Chicago, from Chicago, have on you? Talking Second City, you're talking Del Close. Of course, in the 80s, you're talking all those John Hughes films.
My biggest influence in Chicago probably was Rubus Game Room, where I played Pac-Man and elevator action. I actually left Chicago after eighth grade. But any influences I had in Chicago absorbed pre-high school. So mostly my Chicago influences were probably Dr. Demento and, George Carlin, just stuff listening to the radio.
George Carlin is, I think, a very popular early inspiration to a lot of people on the show, but also Pac-Man and... And a shout-out to Ms. Pac-Man. That would also
Absolutely.
Seem to be very important in the formative years of many comedians that we've talked to.
Well, yeah, I think that was our first blush with, any sort of sexuality. It was like, wait a minute, what's all this? It wasn't Ms. Pac-Man. She was, she was one of those women's livers.
Unfortunately, for some of us, it's not only a first blush, but also last blush.
It was a long drought.
So did you go directly from Chicago to L.A.? Is that
when I was but a teen, my family moved to L.A., and under great duress, I had to come with them.
And obviously, I'm sorry?
Go ahead, sir. No, that's it.
Okay.
No joke. No joke. Okay. Just horrible childhood trauma.
We'll insert the jokes later. That's the nice thing about pre-recording the show. So one of the things, obviously, then is, obviously, L.A., did you have folks or family in the business? Is that what sort of drew you to the West Coast?
Oh, not at all. It was just, it was my dad. My dad's company bought a company out here, and it was always his dream to move to California before he was 50. And his 50th birthday was approaching, and so that's where we went. And I really did not want to go at all. I loved Chicago. I loved being able to get around by myself. I had friends in Chicago. I don't think I'd ever even been to L.A. before. I did not want to go at all, and I absolutely hated it my first year here. Going to a new high school, and it was a really big culture, and I was very miserable. And I was sort of a fan of comedy, and I guess I was doing school theater and performing and stuff like that. But I still didn't understand that show business could be a career. I didn't understand that people could get paid to do comedy. I didn't, all of that was really foreign to me. Growing up in Chicago, you're not really aware. Or at least I wasn't. If you don't have family in the biz, you kind of don't understand that that's something that people can actually do for a living. Growing up watching game shows, I was fascinated by the idea that there was a place called Television City, and that sounded like a good place to live, to hang out in. But I didn't understand what it meant to be a game show host or, an executive producer or a writer or anything like that. I just thought, TV, good. Beyond that, I hadn't really given it much thought.
Now you've been actually a game show host now, and
yes.
Do you understand now what it means, and could you enlighten the audience? Because I look at, your Wink Martindales and such, and I think to myself, what is your world? What is the world of a game show host?
Oh, gosh, I don't know how to answer that.
After you strip out the hookers and booze, I mean, what's left, really?
Well, I certainly wouldn't put myself in the category of Mr. Martindale, who I've had the pleasure of spending a little bit of time with. It's a blast. I really like it a lot. It's there's something really, really special about being able to be in a position where you can, in some small way, change someone's life. Even if it's even if it's just giving him some prizes or, you know, a little bit of money, you know, let alone, I think, I came along, you know, just as the shows with these super huge prizes were coming along. But, you know, it's a really neat position to be in. And as I've kind of entered the game show world more and more, I've gotten to know a lot of the enthusiasts and, you know, kind of super fans of it. And just there's a lot of reverence out there for shows, and I've really kind of gotten to respect that. And as I've done the What's My Line show, I've just really come to appreciate a lot of the history of it. And, you know, it's very humbling. It's really great to kind of be in the company of a lot of these people. And it's a trip.
It's a kind of unique bit of Americana, I think, you know, that we don't think of. We sort of think of jazz as being uniquely American, but I think you're right. There is something very unique about game shows, and I'm a little bit older than you are. I know that when I was growing up, the morning game shows were that was on both, you know, NBC, CBS, ABC, Video Village. I mean, there were no soap operas didn't start till later on in the day. The morning was made up of, you know, primetime comedy reruns, right? Lucy and Beverly Hillbillies.
That was my favorite part about being homesick was I just love watching game shows. And I would remember, you know, when I would have to do summer school or something in junior high and high school, I would I would leave at the last possible moment and try to get home as soon as I could to find out what happened on Card Sharks that day. And, you know, I guess I have to admit that perhaps my friends and I were nerds, because we would call each other and you know, talk shop about what happened on, you know, Card Sharks. I can't believe he said higher than a 7. He should have said lower. You know, that kind of stuff. Maybe we were nerds. Maybe we should have had dates instead. But, you know, for whatever reason, there was just that attraction to me to the shows. I don't know if it was just, you know, I think maybe it was the play-along element. You know, I didn't have a lot of parental attention, and you know, maybe it was just a matter of, you know, you know, or maybe I don't need to make an excuse about it. They're fun. You know, there's a reason that game shows, you know, are such a, so evergreen. You know, they keep coming back all the time, is that they're really fun to play along with. And the best shows, I think, are the ones that, you know, you're shouting at the TV.
And I think the host plays a more important part in the show than people are willing to admit. It, you know, if you will, the original, for example, the original Hollywood Squares with Peter Marshall, right?
Yeah.
There was just enough warmth and matched with a little bit of snark. I think the best game show hosts have a little bit of snark, and that's a word that I would sort of use to describe part of your public persona. I have no idea whether you're like that, and you know, with your friends, but there's a slight edge of snark there, and that's like MSG for comedy. And I'm wondering, did you learn that along the way? Because it's so clear, especially, obviously, VH1's Best Week Ever and all those E! Shows are like that. But there's always that kind of, it's that kind of that cutting edge without being mean-spirited. I think that's really the difference. Well, and how do you find that line?
I mean, I try not to analyze it too much, but what I always try to do is, you know, I try to be sort of irreverent without being disrespectful. And, you know, I think there's a way to do that. And, you know, once in a while you go over the line. But, you know, Best Week Ever to me, and I don't do that show anymore, but, you know, that was always a little bit uncomfortable for me, because I think on time, there's times on that show when they do go a little too mean, just for my comfort level. I think it's a great show, and I really admire the people who can do it very well. There's times when, you know, I look at the same material and see what some of those other guys come up with, and it's just like, man, I just couldn't come up with that stuff. The writing on that is really good. But as far as, like, the game show stuff, I don't know. I guess it's just reaction stuff. The stuff that I really enjoy doing best is where I get to react off of people, and where I get to, you know, respond to something that someone says that just doesn't kind of sound right to me. And, you know, if I can sort of point out why it doesn't sound right, that usually what I've learned is the audience has somehow noticed that too.
There's some wonderful video of you bantering with Larry King, I guess, who was a guest. Was he sort of the special guest on one of the What's My Lines?
Yeah, he was one of our really, really great mystery guests that we had on the What's My Line Live on Stage show.
And there's some bantering between the two of you, and that really, that's I mean, no kidding, that's golden stuff. That's just, you can tell that you're in the moment, and you caught Larry by surprise. And, you know, Larry's seen it all three times at this point in his life.
that was one of my favorite moments on stage, maybe ever. It's really fun when you have fun, and you can just tell that, oh, they weren't expecting you to be that funny, and it's kind of, you know, that's a nice little feather in your cap. You know, another moment we had was I used to do a talk show, a live talk show, and there was a moment when we had the late John Vitter was on the show, and, you know, talk about someone that you grew up watching and admiring, and, you know, and I looked over and I realized I just said something that made John Ritter laugh. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff is really, it still, you know, still means something to me. But, you know, yeah, playing off of people, that's my favorite thing to do. That's why, you know, I don't really do stand-up because it's not really my, I don't think it's my strong suit sort of generating new material, but I love working off of other people. And so that's really what appeals to me about hosting. And in game shows, there's so much to react off of, especially, you know, on a panel type show with, like, What's My Line? The thing that I like about it so much is there's so much to react off of, is that, you know, you react off of the panelists, you react off of the guests, or the mystery guests in the audience. And, you know, I think it's a venue that's really worked well.
And I think from the pieces that I've seen online with you, it works exceptionally well. For those joining us, we're talking with J. Keith Van Stratton. You can find out everything in the world about him over at jkeith.net. Also, he is the host of Yahoo Answers on the Street, and you can find that over on Yahoo, or you can get links over there on jkeith.net as well. The Yahoo Answers thing are wonderful. I went through a bunch of them today. How do you give a really good wedding toast? How do you grill the perfect juicy steak? Now, of course, the first question I have is, that's another opportunity for you to react off of things, right? So that's a perfect, a perfect environment, if you will, for you to kind of do that little magical thing there. Do you figure out the premise in advance? Do you work with the producers to figure out the premise? How does that whole thing come together?
Well, the questions are inspired by actual questions that are on the Answers site, which has been around for a little while and has something like 90 million users. And so they selected from that 28 questions that the producers and Yahoo and the sponsor agreed, you know, were a good cross section of questions to do for our first cycle. So they picked 28 of those questions, and then what you see is what you get. We went out in the street and asked random passersby those questions, and then they actually booked some actual experts because they didn't want to just do a thing where it was, you know, look, people are idiots, or some people aren't idiots. They wanted to actually provide.
Because that's another Yahoo program at this point. Look, people are idiots.
And, exactly. Yes, we're developing original content for them right now.
Every week.
I was asked to appear frequently on that program, and I had conflicts.
Well, the thing that I really liked about the project, other than, you know, the fact that they wanted to hire me, was that they were interested in actually providing real information to people, you know, in a hopefully funny and creative way. And so in addition to doing these people on the street interviews, they actually actually book real experts. So that, you know, in the course of 3.5 minutes, hopefully you find a little bit of entertainment, but you can also get some real information and actually answer these questions. And that's been a lot of fun.
It's very delightful. But one of the things that I thought of when I sort of look at the, you know, sort of the CV of stuff that you've put together, let's be honest, in a fairly short time, I mean, it's not like you've been doing this for 50 years. You know, you're still a young guy. And so as I look through all of this, I think to myself, the internet, I was wondering, do you think the internet, the sort of the availability of all of these outlets, does that help your career or does that hinder your career?
That's a good question. I mean, in the short term, at least, it's been helping. I mean, you know, I'm certainly grateful for the opportunity that Yahoo's giving me to, you know, to practice my craft. I mean, you know, as soon as I heard about what the project was, I was like, you know, literally what I said to my representatives, well, this is what I do, you know, like, this is exactly the kind of thing that I like to do. I like going out and talking to people. I like trying to provide information to people. And, you know, I like the variety of, you know, covering a different variety of topics. So, you know, in that sense, it's helping. As far as hindering, I kind of wonder, just because, you know, when you're doing something on the internet, you're not doing it sort of with the, you know, with the scope and the breadth and, you know, the production values and budgets that you would do for TV. So, you know, in that sense, it's not as, you know, it's not as big of a scale as necessarily you would want. On the other hand, though, it also provides a lot more exposure. You know, it's really nice to be able to tell people if they're asking, you know, well, what are you working on or what can I see you doing, to be able to say, oh, well, you can view my work, you know, right now at any instant by going to a little site called Yahoo. So,
right.
You know, in that way it's helpful, just, you know, talking business. You know, you hear so much about, you know, the future of the business and all this stuff, and you know, it seems to be happening right now. I've heard for the last 10 years about how all of you know, so much of show business is going to go online, and it really kind of seems to be happening now, where you've got a major corporation sponsoring this, and you've got, you know, a lot of the production company that puts this on, this is their first foray into the internet. They've done all traditional TV stuff before. So, you know, it looks to be like the future's here for now. You know, we'll see what the numbers end up being, and whether they want to do another, you know, a second cycle of it. But, you know, I'd be perfectly happy if this is something that keeps going on for a long, long time. And, you know, the other advantage of it, frankly, is that unless I get pinched in, you know, horrible dogfighting ring, these episodes are going to live there forever.
Right.
And that's something that TV doesn't offer you, is that kind of sort of permanent, you know, that permanent exposure. And, you know, just as a, if you'll pardon me calling myself an artist, but, you know, for an artist to be able to say, you know, my work is going to be somewhere forever. I, you know, I'm in the permanent collection of the Yahoo Museum of Video. you know, that part's kind of nice. So, you know, I got no complaints about it.
And I like the way you served Michael Vick. And if Michael Vick is out there, you've just blown your hosting career, my friend. You had it all. You could have come in on any show, Card Sharks, Family Feud, anything, but you blew
it. No whammy.
That's
no whammy.
Right.
Well, he could be the new host of Dog Eat Dog.
There's the snark. We don't need VH1.
That's right. One of the things I was thinking of, though, in this sense that, you know, you are obviously making a living doing this, and there are clearly a lot of venues on the internet that will probably be popping up all over the place as people try and introduce content that will draw audiences to their sites. But, you know, we just had what's the big morning show?
Price is Right?
Price is Right. We had a change of command over there at the Price is Right.
And there was white smoke?
Yeah, exactly.
We got a new pope.
Is that the penultimate achievement, though? Is that still the Holy Grail, something like that, you know, being the host of a program of that magnitude?
Oh, absolutely. You guys mentioned the game show, radio game show that I hosted for a little while earlier this year. I had on a bunch of people as guests. That was an internet radio show that focused on the game show world. And with every guest that I had, we ended up talking about that while they were still looking for a host. And we had Todd Newton on as a guest, and you know, he was one of the people who was considered for it. He hosts the live version of Price is Right in Las Vegas, and you know, as he said, that's the top of the game show mountain.
Yeah.
And that's something that you know, people who are fans of the show and who are game show fans. I don't know one fan of game shows, and I've met a lot of them in the last few years, who doesn't consider that the, you know, one of the best game shows of all time, and you know, really hold the Price is Right with reverence. They were really eager to know what was going to happen with that, and something that they really cherish and hold dear.
Yeah, there seems to be a culture of value around the Price is Right that's really, it's kind of charming.
It's Americana.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's amazing. I went to a taping of it, one of Mr. Barker's last tapings of it this spring, and I could not believe, I don't think I've ever been in a more just positive, joyous, space, maybe ever. It was like a revival meeting meets like your team just won the Super Bowl in the last second. It was just amazing. The love and the positive feeling and you know, just the absolute rapturous joy that people have for it. It really means something to people. It's unbelievable.
And our one of our regulars here on the show, Jason Nathanson, he actually went to a taping earlier this year as well and said that I think he basically confirmed your impressions and also said that Bob Barker was everything that you saw on TV seemed genuine, and in fact, when he was off the air, he was even better. Like the stuff that was not shot, that he was just interacting with the audience, was even better. That he was sort of perfect for what he was doing there. He was born to host that show.
You know, one of the things that there are two things I really admire about Bob Barker. And I grew up watching Bob Barker on Truth or Consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Barker did two things that I really admired. And the first was when he stopped using the hair color.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I was watching that first episode when he came out with the gray, and I remember the audience reaction. I mean, just completely embraced him. It was wonderful.
Yeah. It's shocking, and I thought, by God, you know, you believe in your moral code,
yeah,
and you were willing to let that, which could be a career-affecting move, but you trusted your audience, and they loved you through it, and this is an important message for you to get across,
yep,
and I always admired that. And the other thing that I admired was that, you know, there was the whole dust up over the Diane Parkinson thing, mm-hmm. you know, a decade right. or so ago. And I thought, A, you did it with class. You know, he right. dealt with this with enormous class. And B, I was struck at how the fans didn't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
The media tried to turn it into a big deal.
Something and salacious. And yep.
And it just never took off. That thing just never really got wings. And I think it's because of some basic quality of the character of Bob Barker that people yeah. felt, I know this guy.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to believe something icky about him.
I think that's well put. And of course, I won't ask you to opine on this because you're in the same industry, but obviously Drew Carey is now getting ready to take over. And if you read the trades, I don't know whether this is sniping by people who did not get chosen, but there's little bits and pieces of, did we make a mistake? Is he the right guy? There's stories about other tapings and things of that nature. Obviously, there's no way of telling. I'm sorry. I don't know if you want to share an opinion. I don't think there's any way of telling until he actually gets that long, skinny microphone and starts to do the job.
Well, I'm curious to see if he or the network are going to make any changes to the show or not. It's funny, I actually saw Drew and talked with him a little bit at that Mort Sahl event in the backstage when Jen Karam got me into the after party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I was talking with him because he had just shot the pilot for his new game show coming up, which apparently was so strong in CBS's eyes that they wanted to offer him the job, right, apparently without an audition. And he was just saying, oh, yeah, you know, it's such a trip to be hosting a game show host. I'd never thought about it before or, you know, hadn't really considered it. And, you know, I guess my feeling was just that, you know, I just hope it's something he's really dedicated to. You know, I mentioned Todd Newton and, you know, I know Rich Fields, who is the Price is Right announcer. And, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, really care and really hold precious the property and the games and, you know, who want the job and would want to do it for 20, 30 years. And, you know, I think Drew would do a great job. I just hope it's something that he's really dedicated to and holds with reverence, because I think it's something that, you know, is probably easy for a lot of people to not take seriously. And, you know, the way it is, you know, yes, it is silly. It is just a game show, but it, you know, it does mean a lot to people. And
it is an American institution, and you're coming in after Carson.
There's so few of those things left. It would just be nice something that we don't have to make ironic or have to make casual. You know, it would be nice if it kind of maintains the formality and, you know, maintains the kind of, you know, it sounds weird to use this word in conjunction with the game show, but maintains the integrity of it. And I just hope that's something that they do. Because I think, you know, if it's something that he really wants, I think it's something that he could do a great job with. I think, you know, he's incredibly talented. I just hope that it's something that he really wants and sticks with.
I think what you just said is spot on, that it not become ironic, that it retain, and frequently in comedy today, the kind of postmodern, if you will, not to get too intellectual about it, there is a deconstruction of the deconstruction of the deconstruction to the point where it's abstracted and the only thing that's left is the irony. And I agree with you, there is a kind of simple, lovely joy about game shows. I think it's one of the reasons that Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune are so successful, continue to be so successful in the evenings. Price is Right is so successful during the daytimes. I had a chance to speak just very briefly with Drew backstage at the in the green room as well, and the one thing I thought was I should have been nicer to him now. You know, had I known, I would have treated him with more reverence, but that falls on me. Exactly.
I actually live across the street from Television City now, and you know, I see the lines of people who put out their sleeping bags or just sit in their beach chairs overnight waiting to get into the Price is Right, and especially after Bob Barker announced his retirement, you know, the lines really grew. And, you know, these are people who plan their, you know, sometimes, you know, who plan their vacation, sometimes the only vacation that they'll get around coming to L.A. and seeing the Price is Right. And I just hope that whatever they do, it's something that respects that. You know, these are people who, you know, yes, they seem silly, and yes, they wear big, silly T-shirts, but, you know, this is something that's very important to them. And I would just like to, you know, I would like to see, I don't want to see those crowds go away or those crowds become, you know, angry mob that burned down my apartment.
Well, they have to, one thing they have to do, and if, Drew, if
by
you're
the
listening.
Way, by the way, Keith, I don't want to see that either, just so that you
right.
know we're on your side as far as the whole arson thing goes.
Yeah. Fairfax Avenue is a beautiful place, and Television City is a lovely spot.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and they got the farmer's market down there. You can get some nosh and read a book. But you've...
I just got cable, and, you know, I don't want to have to pay for the box.
But I'm thinking, and Drew, if you're out there listening, please keep the mountain climber prop and keep the little yodel. That is important to me, and I don't want it messed with.
Well, here's the reason I'm hopeful, all right? I mean, I don't know him personally, but my sense from what I've seen of him and the things that I've read is Drew Carey's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's not a guy who kind of got into this basically doing dumb jokes and kind of lucked into it. He's a smart guy. He understands what's happening, and I imagine he's going to be aware of this whole thing and take this in and make this his own in that way.
Yeah, well, the other thing I know about Drew is just from watching his work is that he surrounded himself with really good people.
Yeah.
You know, when he was doing, you know, when he goes on the road and does, you know, the improv shows, you know, it's the improv all-stars. He surrounds himself with people who really know what they're doing. And, you know, on his sitcom, you know, my God, the cast on that was outstanding.
Genius.
And so, you know, I know that from what I understand, they're keeping Rich Fields, who's the announcer and who is almost sort of like a second director of the show.
Sure.
And hopefully they'll keep a lot of the same people who, you know, who made the show great. And if they continue to innovate, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll even make it better. So, you know, let's give them a chance, and hopefully it's something that'll stay on for a while.
We are talking with J. Keith Van Stratton. You can find out everything you needed to know about J. Keith and just a little bit more over at jkeith.net. I went to the website. I noticed that there was a photograph of you and Steve Allen. I never had a chance to meet him. Was that sort of an amazing experience?
That was, without a doubt, one of the highlights of my life. I was hosting a live talk show that I used to do that was pretty much, you know, the format was the Tonight Show, which he invented. Through a really long set of circumstances that I won't bore you with, we ended up getting him as a guest on this show.
Wow.
And this was a non-televised show. This was just for a 99-seat theater audience, and he agreed to come on as a guest. And in advance of it, he agreed to, you know, let me come and take some publicity photos, which a couple local newspapers ran. And it was, like I said, without a doubt, not just one of the best performing nights of my life, but just one of the best nights of my life. I mean, he and I really, really clicked on stage. And, you know, to be able to make Steve laugh and to have it on tape, and especially, you know, he ended up staying on not long after. It was just outstanding. He, you know, to be able to talk to the guy who invented the format and say, you know, how did you come up with the idea of going into the audience? How did you come up with the idea of doing man on the street interviews? How did you come up with the idea of doing these stunts? I mean, a lot of the things that we take for granted, and a lot of the things that you know, you see as a staple of any talk show.
Was there a philosophy that you could sort of draw from those answers that would help you as you move forward, or even help us here? I mean, was there something about him that you can take away?
Well, the thing that amazed me about him that I just think I could never do was that he was always writing down ideas. He carried a tape recorder with him, and any ideas, he was basically sort of a modern day efficiency expert. You know, he would never not be thinking or not be doing something. By all accounts that I've heard and read, you know, again, he would have this tape recorder with him and always be recording ideas, you know, either about a book or about a sketch or about, you know, he wrote over 400 songs. I'm probably lowballing there.
Yeah.
And then he would have a staff of people who would play his tapes and write up his notes and file things away. And, you know, he would always just be, you know, his mind was always on, and he was always looking at techniques to keep the mind on, to keep the mind moving, and kind of record thoughts of his mind. But, you know, I'm not that good, and I don't have a staff opinion yet. But what did help was that, you know, he was really good at just sort of allowing things to happen. And, you know, I think one of the things that he had said was, you know, don't be afraid to let the show go in the direction that it needs to go. And, you know, his show was live. And, you know, as far as calling it right, what he said about taking the mic and going to the audience was because they had a technical problem. And, you know, they had time to kill, and they didn't know what to do. And so the idea of just sort of trusting that you know, if something goes wrong, it's an opportunity to try something else. And that served me very well, you know, letting sort of moments of inspiration come when it seems that things are going wrong. I mean, that's almost sort of one of the fundamentals of improv, as I see it also, is that, you know, when something goes wrong, everybody notices it. You got to call, you got to make the call on it,
right,
and find a way to justify it and make it into something better.
So do you force yourself into scary situations in your own career, do you find? No, I mean, I'm not trying to be clever, but I mean, do you sort of say to yourself, this is a good opportunity for me to sort of see some limitation and maybe grow upon that?
Not really. It would be nice if I did, but I would say more creative. I would say I do it more creatively than career wise. You know, I haven't really had the luxury of, you know, of saying, well, I have so many projects that where people want me, I'm going to choose the one that's most dangerous. You know, I would say more, you know, creatively of trying to, you know, to accept the risk in something, you know, as opposed to, you know, for instance, we had a guest on the What's My Line show a couple weeks ago, and we had an opportunity to bring a dog on stage, and the person said, well, maybe we could bring the dog, but I would be concerned that the dog might get nervous and pee on stage. And instead of saying, like, oh, God, what would we do if the dog peed on stage? We recognize if the dog pees on stage, that equals comedy gold.
Yeah. Liquid gold, so, my friend.
Exactly. Liquid gold, indeed. Well put. So, you know, just accepting that, like, things that go wrong, you know, things that might go wrong like that, not only are they not going wrong, but it's actually an opportunity to make something even better and, you know, to be able to trust yourself. That I kind of have this philosophy about live performing. Which is that whatever, you know, whatever goes wrong, we can justify it. And, you know, that's kind of one of the basic tenets for me of improv is that, you know, you can sense in the audience when you're doing improv, like if somebody says something or does something that's either denial or conflicts with something else that's been established or doesn't make sense and it doesn't get resolved or doesn't get justified, the whole audience is uneasy. And as soon as somebody does it in a satisfying way, that's usually what leads to making the scene more interesting or a big laugh.
Yeah, that's a wonderful release. We're coming to the end of our time with you. We know you have to go, but best game show of all time, worst game show of all time.
Ooh, worst.
The second. I know the worst season. The worst game show. Second season of Beat the Geeks.
Game show of all time, just because it popped in my head. Because believe it or not, the reason I have to go is because I have my Scrabble club to get to tonight. I'm that cool. I'm pacing outside of the community center to go in. So I'm actually going to say, because it popped in my head, I'm going to say Scrabble. Even though I actually liked the show and auditioned for the show, I'm going to say it's the worst because A, I didn't get accepted when I auditioned for the Teen Week, and B, because the show had nothing to do with Scrabble.
Right. Was that Hugh Downs?
To do with, say again?
Who was the hit? Was Hugh Downs the host of that?
That was Chuck Woolery.
Chuck Woolery. All right.
Chuck Woolery hosted Scrabble, and it had nothing to do with arranging letters and making it better. Just they put the letters on the board, and you had to guess what the word was.
Yeah. Which is really, that's Scrabble. An acrostic. That's not really Scrabble.
Yeah. And then I would know about the best, but my favorite game show was Body Language, which was a charades-type game that was in the 80s hosted by... I think it was by Bill Cohen.
Very
Although
good.
I'm certainly a huge fan of What's My Line, obviously. But, you know, that's more of a panel show than a quiz game thing. But I really love What's My Line. And
Keith, you're a prince for letting us keep you on for as long as we have.
I've been loving recreation of it.
Thank you so much for joining us. I mean, like, another two pages of questions. Maybe you'll be nice enough to come back and talk to us again.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
All right.
Anytime.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so
Jake Keith Van Stratton. jkeith.net over in Yahoo Answers on the Street. We'll put links on the webpage. Have a good time. Good luck tonight.
Thanks so much. Thanks everybody.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll take a quick break, come back on the other side, and finish this bad baby up. What do you think?
I love it.
Isn't he great?
He was great.
Wish
him no Q's or X's tonight.
But aren't those high points?
They are, but what if you're not on your game and you can't figure out?
Does this sound like a guy who's not on his game?
No.
He's talking about all of the things that his father, you know, he mentioned what his father had accomplished. Well, he had one company by the time another company is like, I'm doing a talk show here in my, okay, fine. So.
It's diminishing, isn't
hardest,
it?
Hardest? Well, I mean, listen, by the time Mozart was my age, dead 25
dead.
Years.
Yeah.
All right. We want to thank Jake Keith Van Stratton.
Absolutely.
That was so cool. That was so cool. I think there is more than just a little envy. I mean that in a good way, which is like he figured out a lot of the stuff that he wanted to do. And what I really want to understand at some point is he found ways of making that happen.
Yeah.
Right? So he's doing television and he's doing this Yahoo. He didn't want to say it. Yahoo's sponsored by GMC Trucks.
Oh, yeah.
That's the sponsor of the Yahoo Answer of the Street. I mean, it's not like it's sponsored by...
This is not small-time deal.
No, it's not Joe's Muffler Shop. It's GMC Trucks. He drives to the thing in a GMC truck. He's hanging out the window. He's looking cool. And I know he thinks of himself as a nerd, but he... came to age at the right time because now nerd is so cool.
Like what we were talking about with Comic-Con.
Absolutely. All right. More tunage celebrating the summer of love. And then back on the other side, you're listening to Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein and Sean Meehan voted me and. I got your name wrong like 8 different times today. I'm excited. I wanted to talk to him. I thought he'd be great. I liked him the moment I saw him. I thought, you're a good guy. I hope you go as far as you want and another 10 feet. Into the goal line. Over the goal line.
Into the goal. Ouch.
Into the goal line. What would Wall say about that? All right. Stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
The beat goes on, the beat goes on. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La da 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 dee, la da 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 da. Charleston was once the rage, thing, Teeny Bopper is our newborn king, And the beat goes on, the beat goes on. The drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La da 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 dee. La da 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 da. The grocery store, the supermarket. Little girls will break their hearts, And men still keep on marching off to war. Goes on, the beat goes on.
Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La da 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 dee, la da 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 da.
Grandma's sitting chairs and reminisce. Going faster all the time. Mom still cries, hey buddy, have you got a dime? And the beat goes on, the beat goes on.
Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain. La da 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 dee, la da 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 da,
and the beat goes on.
Yes, the beat goes on,
and the beat goes on,
and the beat goes on.
The beat goes on.
This is a test of the Schnauzer Emergency Comedy System. This is only a test.
I'm a board-certified loser, apparently.
Well, thank God you've got the credentials.
This has been a test of the Schnauzer Emergency Comedy System. Had this been an actual emergency, you would have been instructed where to tune in your area for jokes, puns, riddles, and dirty limericks. This completes this test of the Schnauzer Emergency Comedy System. We now return to your program already in progress.
Welcome back. We're 48 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzer Logic, our big 60th anniversary episode, being recorded on Wednesday. It's August the 1st. Would have been my dad's birthday today. Happy birthday, Dad. I missed the hell out of you. Welcome back to you. That was a good interview. Unfortunately, the phone was breaking up.
That was the worst part of the interview. Everything else I loved.
The nice thing about people having cell phones is we can reach them all over the place. And the tougher thing, of course, is that cell phones are not perfect in this country. You would think they would be. They're perfect in Europe.
They have a bigger cell phone culture. They had a bigger one earlier than we did.
That's true. I guess that's true. We were talking about... that's right. We were talking about secret pleasures, guilty pleasure movies. I have to mention this, by the way. I'm curious whether you have them. I am a huge secret fan of the Fast and Furious movies. And I've seen all three of them now, and I've only seen them on Cinemax at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I wind up sort of finding them by accident. The first one was Vin Diesel,
right?
That was kind of a breakout role for him. But these are not about dialogue. They're not much about story. They're actually all not that much about action. But there's just something about the movement. And last weekend I saw Fast and the Furious 3: Tokyo Drift. Oh, man.
That's a kind of race, right? A drift race.
So a drift is kind of the car spinning by kind of braking and using the emergency brake while you apply, so that basically the back end of the car slides out, right?
Right.
So it's a way of moving in tight spaces when you wouldn't otherwise be able to turn because the turn radius of the car is too...
Is too wide.
Yeah. Do you have guilty pleasure movies, any movies that are guilty pleasures for you?
There are individual guilty pleasure movies. There's not a franchise of guilty pleasures, but I will say that there's a film called Capricorn One.
Oh, yeah.
That is a guilty pleasure of mine, where a sort of a faked Mars mission winds O.J. Simpson and Mr. Barbara Streisand in
James
trouble.
Brolin.
James Brolin,
yeah.
in the desert, and a young Sam Waterston.
Right.
There were these series of British films in the maybe early 70s with Doug McClure, and they did a lot of the Edgar Rice Burroughs stuff, you know, at the Earth's core,
yeah,
and those kinds of things. And so I guess that is kind of a little series. The dinosaurs were hand puppets. They right from Sesame Street to Jurassic Park, they came. But I love those.
I would never go to... I've never been to a theater to see the movie. I would never rent a Fast and Furious. I wait for it to show up on Cinemax, as it always does, at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. I watched Fast and Furious today. Is Wednesday we're recording this. I think I watched it either Saturday night or Sunday night. Saturday going into Sunday, it was at 3 o'clock in the morning. I got up. I made myself a little something to eat, a little something to drink. I kind of wrapped myself up in a blankie, and I got onto my lounge chair, and I put it on, and I thought, this is going to be good.
And it was.
It was perfect.
It delivered on every level.
It was perfect. But the cell phone thing, I had seen Wall Street a few weeks ago. And you remember, there you go, you remember the scene of Michael Douglas walking on the beach holding that piece of 2x4 lumber next to his head, right? When that was cool.
Oh my gosh, you know, that was proof he was a billionaire.
Right.
You know, he had that giant thing. The thing looked like one of the walkie-talkies from World War II, you know, some guy on Omaha Beach calling in the fire from some destroyer. It was just incredible. But that's how you knew he was super rich.
He had that phone.
Yeah.
He had that phone. I didn't have one of those phones. I had the portable kind of lap version of that phone when I worked for Sony Corporation, and it was a Panasonic. It was a those today's little phones, I think they put out 600 milliwatts maximum power because they realized that putting anything more than that of that frequency next to your head is a good way to get a brain tumor.
Right.
Hey, wait a second. Hey. But those phones put out 5 watts. And I had one of those things sitting in the front seat next to me, cooking those hot dogs that Jay Keith likes so much.
You know, it's terrible. I was watching a show. I think it was History's Lost and Found, and they were telling the story of the first microwave oven, which was developed like at Raytheon.
It was
or something.
Back in Massachusetts,
right?
Yeah,
and it came out of research into big radar systems the Allies were using to defeat the Axis in the Second World War. And one day, a guy, a physicist, comes into his office, and he's got some popcorn, and he puts it next to his experimental apparatus, his radar apparatus, and the popcorn starts cooking. Yeah. It starts popping.
Yeah.
And you're just thinking, oh, my God. You know, and he's sitting there thinking, I've got an idea for how we can make money after the war. I'd be thinking, get the fuck out! Jesus God!
Well, those first units were called... Raytheon started an appliance division called Amana.
Right.
And the very first units were called Amana radar ranges.
Exactly.
That's where they were
water-cooled. You had to change the plumbing in your house. They were 600-pound water-cooled monsters.
But perfectly safe.
Absolutely.
But perfectly safe. Well, I think you're right. I think that's an instance. I think those are both good instances of where being first on the block is not the best thing. The Europeans came along much later in the whole phone thing. And as a result, by the time they embraced the technology, they went with GSM, which was kind of generation two, generation three. They didn't have the infrastructure already in place. And so they went with a better, more scalable system that has stood them in good stead for now many, many years. And that is a more robust system than they have it rolled out everywhere. And here, quite frankly, I know people say this, I think it's getting worse. I don't know why, but I get worse reception, poorer calls, more drop signals. You know, can you hear me now? No. It's a shame. Something else we won't be able to hear anymore is famous for those who were in the United States, you know, regardless of what football team you rooted for, or whether you rooted for football at all, you knew about Bill Walsh.
Yeah. An important part of my joy of the 80s. In the 80s, I moved down to Los Angeles to sort of be on the periphery of the film industry. And one of the things I did, I mean, those were the glory years for the 49ers. He was the head coach of the 49ers during their great runs, their great Super Bowl runs.
And Joe Montana.
Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, prior to Jerry Rice. I mean, it was a wonderful time to be a 49ers fan. And they were a fun and innovative team, too.
Yeah.
They were changing the way football was played.
Yeah.
And I, you know, down in L.A. at that time, there was no way to get information about your teams. You know, cable was still relatively new. There was no
right.
Sunday package where you could just select
right,
a team.
Right, right.
I had to order the Chronicle, you know, the San Francisco Chronicle, and have it delivered down there. It was a magical time. He passed away from leukemia just the other day. It was disheartening. Barry Bonds is still the whole thing's still up in the air.
That's right. He hasn't hit 755 yet. And Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball here in the United States, who was not going to go, and then basically said, well, he's innocent until proven guilty. Therefore, I guess I have to show up.
Right.
There's a ringing endorsement. And I was saying to Sean during the last song break that I thought that if I were Barry Bonds, I would never hit another home run as long as Bud Selig goes to the game. I would force him to follow me around the country
Absolutely.
For game after game.
Ruin vacation plans until the end of the season. Just one thing I wanted to say, putting together our guest and some of the things I noticed at Comic-Con, here is another example of a guy with a lot of talent who has an alternate venue that you don't think of. You think, well, I want to be a game show host one day.
Yeah.
How many game shows are there? Maybe half a dozen at this point on television. You think, I've got no hope. I can never make a living. I'll never beat out Wink Martindale or whoever it is to host some different show.
Right.
You don't have to. There are venues, just like Comic-Con, you know, where you see all these, this almost subterranean economy. There are venues, there are possibilities for people who want to be creative and who are interested in developing the chops to be creative. There are ways to make money. There are ways to make that your life. Maybe even get, you know, health insurance. Maybe get vision and dental if you're good enough at it.
I hope so. I'd like to believe that that's the case and that there isn't simply a dilution of talent. Now, it's hard to imagine because now, you know, I was thinking while he was talking, the package he's doing for Yahoo
right.
is the kind of package that would easily be syndicated on all of your local nighttime news once a week as a feature package, right? And, this week's episode of, Ask Jeeves, here's J. Keith Van Stratton. Keith, how's it going? You know, it's like, and he would cut a little personal intro. It's like, fine, Meredith, you know, he'd be sitting in a studio someplace. He'd cut all these intros for all these local stations. They'd send him out by satellite or probably just send him out on fucking Betacam tapes.
Sure.
And he would have rolled that way. Now it's on the internet. So on the one hand, cost of entry is a lot lower. But on the other hand, I think a lot of people of our generation still consider the internet not to be legitimate media. And I'm putting my fingers together. You can't see that. But there's a lack of legitimacy to it. Even though, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the show here, week after week, we reach on this show somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 listeners a week. That is a very respectable size audience for a small station almost anywhere in the country, except
sure.
for, you know, perhaps, you know, New York, Los Angeles, San, you know, those are, you're going to have bigger numbers. But, I mean, if you're doing stand-up and you're packing 2,000 people into a club every
weekend,
you're
doing okay.
You're doing just fine. So, I mean, those numbers are kind of weird. And yet, there's once again, lack of legitimacy over the whole thing. So, I don't know how you put that together. And if you're trying to get the coin, right? You know, the Yahoo thing is probably not, I don't know, but I'm guessing it's not paying them high six figures, right?
No.
I mean, I'm guessing
sure.
it's, you know, it's a good, so how do you get to the place where you don't have to be doing 27 gigs simultaneously in order to keep the money? I don't understand that yet, but damn, I wish him all the best.
I do too.
I just, you know, sometimes you meet someone and you go, I don't know what it is, but you got it. He's got
sweet.
He's
and
got
sincere.
It. Yeah.
And edgy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's just a really
yeah.
unusual.
And he's got more sets of glasses than Paul Schaefer. I wrote to him and I said, I want to start. If you go to his website, jkeith.net, you'll find lots and lots of media. His video all over the place of him interviewing people on the game shows and the Yahoo stuff. And every time you see him, he's wearing a different pair of glasses. And I thought, I want to start a J. Keith drinking game. Every time he changes glasses, you take a chug. You know, I figure. And then it sort of gives new meaning to drinking yourself blind. But anyhow. And Tom Snyder died, also of leukemia.
I know.
I mean, talk about sad. He was an inspiration. You know, J. Keith talked about how, I'm guessing it's just Keith, and I'm sounding like an ass, but I keep calling him by his first initial. But he talked about how Steve Allen was an inspiration. I think Steve Allen was an inspiration for my dad, and therefore had an impact on me. But Tom Snyder was an iconoclast in doing interviews. And so I looked at people like Tom Snyder and I thought, wow, you can be yourself.
Right. You can do an interview that way.
And you can laugh.
Yeah.
You can have a good time during the interview. And I tried to reach out to him a few years ago to have him as a guest. And I he had already sort of succumbed to the early stages of leukemia, which is too bad. He'd interviewed my uncle, the rabbi, though, many years ago. Maybe we'll get my uncle on next week to talk about it. I think we're going to have Doug Sovereign on next week to talk about his new website, Sovereign Nation, all about politics in the United States, which will be very cool. And hopefully Parviz will be back and Cheryl will be back. And you'll be here?
I will be.
All right. So there you go. Thank you so very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you all for listening. I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both. Show up. Pay attention. Tell the truth. And don't be attached to the outcome. We'll see you next week. Take care. Have a good time. And bye-bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
I'm in my vagina.